Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User-Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User-Friendly 2.0. Jeremy and Gretchen, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi there.
So we got a great show today. We're going to talk a little bit more about Comic-Cons and that type of thing in general. We're going to be doing a segment on costuming, but more specifically the technology behind it and sewing machines. Just really quickly, what's that going to be, Gretchen?
We're going to talk about sewing machines and how they work and how they don't work.
Yeah, the don't work, I think, is the side of this that we're focusing on. We've also got G interviewing an actor coming up here. We'll tell you about who that is a little bit later in the show. And we have a Q&A for you, and you can send us your questions and your comments. You can call us, 503-766-6264. That's 503-766-6264. And when you call in, you'll get a recording. Leave your message, and then we'll call you back and do an interview, put you on the show, or just answer your question if you prefer that. You can also send it on social media at One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter, or userfriendlyshow.com. Well, it's now time for our news, and our news segment today is sponsored by We Are Technology, wearetechnology.com, the place to go if you need an app or a website for your business. What do we have in the news today?
Software used as drug pusher.
Now Jeremy, this sounds ominous. And Jeremy, I know this was a topic you sent me. Do you want to talk about this a little bit?
Yeah. Basically, what we've got is there's a company that writes the software that all the doctors are using to take care of their patients. And an opioid manufacturer managed to bribe the software developer into making a pop-up that would ask if the patient's symptoms required a certain type of drug, and 90% of those would be opioids.
Okay, so in other words, when you were putting in your client's notes, the software suggested you gave him pain pills.
Yes.
Oh, what could possibly go wrong with that?
Well, absolutely nothing as far as our opioid crisis is concerned.
I think that's kind of cruddy.
Yeah, it is.
I would have to agree with you. And yet, Jeremy, from what you were saying, yeah, it seems spot on that the drug manufacturers had sponsored the software and been able to actually insert into the software these things where it would pop up and give recommendations on what to prescribe and that type of thing based on certain things. And I think when you look at it and seeing why there's so much drug addiction now to these pain pills, there's a lot of little like secret things going on here that we didn't know about.
No.
So what's next?
Okay. FCC Chairman Ajit Pai says phone carriers illegally shared location data fueling black market sales.
Okay, another one where I have to ask, what could possibly go wrong with that? They haven't actually disclosed the name of which companies, but they're saying that it's at least one, if not more than one, of the major carriers.
Oh, no.
And so it's possible that information that wasn't supposed to be disclosed, what you weren't being told it was disclosed, was in fact being sold. And that's what they're looking at here. There's going to be some fines coming out of this, and there's going to be some more information as the investigation continues. But at the end of the day, we want to know that our data is secure. And I know that this is a new age of privacy, which means we don't have privacy much. But at the end of the, you know, it seems like if you're told that specific things are being done with your information and something different is being done, I'm glad the government's investigating that.
Update on Apple charging cables in the EU.
Week before last, we talked about this, is that the EU wants to standardize all of the adapter cables for all of the different mobile phones. Now, from an Android environment, that's pretty easy to do, mainly because most of them are USB, the newer ones are USB-C, which kind of works across the board. However, the one holdout on that, and the one that is still unique, is the Lightning port on the iPhone. And this is proprietary to Apple. You can get a converter if you want, but it still is not something that meets these requirements. Apple went in and kind of protested this and asked that they didn't do it. And it turns out at the end of the day that even Apple has to conform to the law in the EU, and they are requiring across-the-board standardization for the charging cables.
This one says, don't use games for coronavirus modeling.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
All right. There are video games that have to do with the idea of plague spreading or disease spreading, that type of thing. And some of these games are being used to try to model the spread, potential spread, if you will, of the coronavirus, the novel coronavirus that has been becoming a pandemic, according to the World Health Organization. And the video game makers are saying that, no, this is a game. This is not supposed to be used as an actual model, even though that seems to have escaped some people.
According to the article, people were playing the game to try and predict where the virus was going to be so that they could go on a vacation and not get infected.
Yes. Oh, my. Okay.
And so their game makers are like, don't do that. It's not accurate.
Oh, wow.
Okay. You know, in 2020, our games are very, very lifelike in a lot of ways. With virtual reality and all of the different things that we have out there and even the console games. And this year we're going into our fifth or next generation of consoles. I call it fifth generation because PlayStation 5. But the fact of the matter here is to remember that these things are still games. They're not meant to be used for real world environments. There is software out there that will do that. In a lot of cases, it's available online and it doesn't even cost any money. But in the case of something like a game, not a real good idea to try to predict where a disease will and won't be based on that. Not designed for it, and there's no way of knowing if the information you're getting from it is correct.
Google Photos sent to wrong users during November 21st to the 25th, and it has something to do with a takeout tool.
Yeah, the tool.
What is this?
The tool that they used is called Takeout. It's for publishing your photos and being able to download them and use them in other things. And the way that it works is you go on and you request what you want, and then a little bit later, they're sent to you. It's a link, and then the takeout tool allows you to get those and use them. So if you wanted to display them like on an e-screen or on television or something offline, you could do it. And during that time period, there was a problem that some of these photo libraries were sent to the wrong people. So you would request it and it would go somewhere else. Obviously, if you had private photos, that might be a bad idea.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, especially if they were sensitive private photos.
Yeah. So, and you know, whatever that may mean. So Google has suggested that any archives that were created, any downloads that were done between the time period of November 21st to 25th, be deleted and get run again. And one thing I do have to say as a heads up to Google is they caught it and got the problem solved in under 4 days, which is actually very quick for these type of situations. But at the end of the day, it is a good idea to go ahead and reset it, run it again. It is supposed to be secure now, at least according to Google. And if you delete it and run it again, everything will be okay.
Yeah, that's probably everybody's Thanksgiving photos,
yeah,
at least here in the States.
So, I'm not too worried about people seeing pictures of me eating turkey, but that isn't necessarily,
that wouldn't be too bad.
Everything that's out there. So, yep, security thing, definitely want to take care of it. So I got to see the press screening this week of Birds of Prey, which is a new movie that is opening this weekend, and it's part of the DC Batman franchise. And, you know, I don't know. I went in to see this. I wasn't sure going into it if the character could actually hold a whole movie on her own. It's kind of my opinion that she couldn't. I found it to be loud, kind of very violent. I don't know, guys. Is this normal for the Batman franchise?
It depends. That's the thing. You've got the current versions of Batman going back all the way to Michael Keaton. And, you know, they kind of got more and more violent as they came on, but it didn't need to be as violent as they had some of them.
Yeah. And then as far as Harley goes, Harley was started in
Batman, the animated series.
Yeah. And that's where she began. And they've changed her into something else.
Yeah, it seems like it, if it was something different here. I mean, I definitely say leave the kids home for this one. If you're going to see it in the theater, it seems like it's one that I certainly wouldn't bring my kids to. And honestly, I think I'd wait until it comes out on home video to really look at this. So basically the rundown of it, it's open season on Harley Quinn when her explosive breakup with the Joker puts a big fat target on her back. Unprotected and on the run, Quinn faces the wrath of narcissistic crime boss Black Smaff, his right-hand man, and every other thug in the city. But things soon even out for Harley when she becomes unexpected allies with three deadly women, the Huntress, Black Canary, and Renee Montoya. I gave this movie a 2 out of 5 hammers. We use the hammer system here. Just basically because I was going in wanting something that was kind of fun, something that, you know, I enjoyed, and I found myself looking at my watch halfway through it. And it was just, again, it was violent, 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 loud, loud, loud. And there just wasn't much of a storyline.
So Harley wasn't the quirky, comedic female that she normally is, that used to be a doctor of psychology?
Well, she used to be a doctor of psychology. They did talk about that and kind of the backstory of the character. She had a PhD, all of this stuff, and worked for the asylum and ended up meeting the Joker and then kind of turned into what she is now. but I would think more quirky, I would use the word sociopath.
Oh,
that's a bummer.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Just my opinion. I don't know. It's a personal thing. Some things are very much over the top violent for me. This is definitely one of them. And I'm admittedly not a huge fan of the Batman franchise, but I don't know. I just kind of walked out of there feeling depressed. Not like I had just been through a fun movie.
Well, that's too bad.
That is too bad.
So if you're a fan of Batman, you might like it. I would definitely say, like I said before, wait until it comes out on home video. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Jeremy, Gretchen, you guys do a lot of cosplay and make a lot of costumes and different things like that. And one of the devices that is a part of that is a sewing machine, correct?
Yes.
Absolutely.
I mean, you don't hand stitch everything or anything like that.
We have hand stitched, but it's only for certain parts of a costume.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, one of the questions I've been asked many times on this and some of the other things I've done is if I've at least made the attempt. Yes, I tried to sew. It didn't end well. So you guys are very good at that, but I understand that you've been having some difficulties with the tech.
Well, we were currently using a Viking that was about 30 years old. Really good machine, had lots of fun features, and then it finally died. And then it was like, oh no, we've got a big project coming up. What are we going to do? We can't hand sew it. So we used to have a set of Singers. And those worked really good. Maverick, we still have the machines. They just need to be brought into a maintenance or somebody
does any repairs that they need because they're both old and they both have one thing that just isn't working right. So they need a little bit of maintenance and repair. But now we have a machine that we just bought and we used for a month and it needs to be fixed.
Yeah. We actually did research to decide which machine we wanted, and we thought about getting a Viking, but those tend to be more expensive. So we thought, why don't we get a Singer again? And so we looked at the Singers to see which ones had a good review. Mm-hmm. And it was the Quantum
Stylus 9960.
And so it's a beautiful looking machine. But after Jeremy used it for a week, it stopped functioning.
Now, I don't know a lot about sewing machines, but I'm led to understand that these are highly computerized now.
This one is more computerized than any sewing machine I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It can auto thread. It can auto cut. Basically, if you throw the thing in there and push a bunch of buttons, it'll actually sew the thing pretty much for you. But the problem we're having is that it won't register that I've threaded the machine.
Okay.
Because you take your spool and you have to wind it through a series of things to put tension on the thread and so that it can maintain the stitch tightness. But it doesn't register that it's threaded anymore, so it won't sew.
So it would do like 8 stitches and then stop, flash this thing. And then Jeremy had to push a bunch of buttons and then it would stitch 8 stitches and do the same thing. And it would tell him to go and check how he threaded the machine. So he did this.
Mm-hmm. I've done it. I rethreaded the machine dozens of times. I contacted Singer for support. They said to do a couple of things, which we did, and it didn't fix the problem.
Right.
So now we had to send the machine to a repair place because there isn't anything nearby. We had to send it all the way down to LA.
Right, right.
Yeah, there's no repair facilities in Nevada or Oregon. And the closest one that we can find is L.A. And get this, Bill, there are 4 in L.A.
Right. Yeah, well, sometimes that happens. I'm assuming you're referring to warranty repair places.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I know that there's places to get a sewing machine repaired around. You drive by them, but, you know, that's a little bit different. So this is sounding like a little bit of a car where they're trying to blend the electronics with the mechanical components of it. And that may not have worked out too well in this case.
Yeah, I'm not happy. That kind of freaks me out. I don't need to have the machine threaded for me. I don't need automatic cutting and all that stuff. I want something that works. I don't mind having the computerized stuff for like the fancy stitches.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those things are really nice.
Yeah, and this one can even do letters.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize that. See, I didn't even get a chance to use it.
Right. So right. Now, your old Viking sewing machine, I know, had stitches and that type of thing, too. But what was that, mechanical in some way?
It was semi-mechanical and semi-computerized because it had different cards you had to insert that would change what stitches, what buttons enabled what stitch.
Okay. So almost like a punch card.
Yeah.
Kind of. It was a cool machine.
It was.
So now, I really like that one. Would you say sewing machines are something where less is more?
Yeah.
at this point, I'm going to say, yeah, less is definitely more. I don't need, I mean, it's threaded. It's going to run. If it's not threaded, then, you know, it still sews. But then, you know, I got to figure out, oh, hey, I don't have a stitch over there. But now it'll still sew, but it won't register that it's threaded. And it will only sew 8 stitches.
So,
and then, you know, it takes like a minute to do 8 stitches, which is not cool.
Yeah, that would slow down progress.
So remember the hem on that cape that Jeremy wore?
Right.
That was done 8 stitches at a time.
Oh, my. Yeah.
Because we had to get the project done or else there was no costume.
So that's the question is, what do you do when your equipment fails and you buy a new one and it doesn't work? I mean, you know, it seems like there would become, I would become frustrated, but I'm sure there's another way to approach it.
Well, no, we were frustrated.
Yeah, no, there's no easy solution because you know, either you go down the street and buy another $100 sewing machine and hope that works, or you keep buying expensive machines and hope the warranty holds out.
Now, with Jeremy's fabric, it would not have worked to hem it by hand.
Right.
Now, I was able to hem your cloak by hand because I could take an iron to it, flatten it, and it would look good. Jeremy's fabric, you couldn't iron it. It would melt the glitter and stuff that was on it. So different fabrics have different procedures.
Yeah.
So hand stitching the hem on that would have looked bad.
So, you know,
that would have been really difficult.
There's a good question for you. When you go to pick out fabric and materials for making a costume like this, what do you take into consideration? Because you probably can't just buy anything.
Actually, you kind of can, depending on what you're going to make.
Well,
see, yours is a heavy duty like canvas, but we made a lot of special things into it, like the fur trim we gave you, so that it would look more elaborate.
Right.
Mine is just shiny fabric.
And the thing is something to take into consideration is if you can wash it.
Right.
When we did like the old Ren Faire and reenactment stuff, I always made sure that the clothing that was next to our bodies, where we would sweat, those things were, I always made them washable, if not by hand, by machine, either way. Now, a lot of the other fabrics on the outside would have required dry cleaning. So I tried to, these are things that you should consider, that if you're going to wear a costume next to your body and you sweat a lot or you're going to be in hot conditions, that either you're willing to pay the dry cleaning or have something that you can throw into the washer or to be able to hand wash it yourself.
Right, right. And that makes sense. And the other thing, Gretchen, is the skill level of being able to sew. Does that change from fabric to fabric?
Yes, at least for me. I find some of the velvets to be challenging and some of the really stretchy stuff like you would make bodysuits out of. I have had a really hard time learning how to sew spandex.
And yeah, I've never tried that. So that's all.
On a costume, you have a lot dealing with foam and that type of thing. You've got about 20 seconds. Is there a special skill that goes into that?
Foam, yeah, because you need to be able to use a heat gun and glue, and then you have to be able to treat it so that you can paint it.
So that's an entirely different process.
Entirely different skill set, yeah.
So, and it's definitely part of cosplay, more than Renaissance Fair, because you're making all these special things that may not exist in the real world. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. This is the section of the show where we answer your questions. Send your questions in, One User Friendly on Facebook and Twitter, or give us a call, 503-766-6264. Jeremy and Gretchen, what do we have today?
This one sounds really dumb, but do programmers really like caffeine?
I don't know if that's a dumb question. I've been often told, let me see if I can remember this correctly, I've been often told that the real job description of a programmer is converting caffeine into source code. And I think that comparison okay. is correct.
Oh, okay. Then I can understand that question.
Yeah. So I know as a software coder myself, yes. And I, from everybody that I've seen around me, most of us do tend to like the coffee and energy drinks and that type of thing. Some don't. But the reality of it is that a lot of the work you're doing is kind of done at odd hours. So sometimes you're working in a situation where you might be going late at night. I know sometimes I work with international teams, so the time zones are different and that type of thing. And, you know, coffee or 10, depending on the day.
Okay. Now it makes more sense. Thanks.
All right. Can you root a Fire TV? I have no idea what they are asking. Can you explain that?
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about what rooting a device is to begin with. So this will make more sense. So when a device is shipped to you, a phone or Fire TV in the case of this question, most of those type of things have an operating system on them and then have a setup where you can do certain things with the device. The term rooting means that you bypass that security, get down to access to the core level or administrative level of the device, and then you can do anything you want with it. Now, being that most Fire TVs, or actually all Fire TVs, are actually an Android computer with a custom user interface on top of it, you can root the device. It is possible to get in. Now, this will void all your warranties, and it will do certain things that you may not want it to do. So if you're going to do that, make sure you actually know what you're doing and why. Sometimes the reasons people would do this is to set it up as a DVR recorder, to be able to get access to some things that may or may not be completely legal streams, that type of thing. So it's not always an above board thing, but it is possible to do. And it's actually something that's not that hard to do, but it will create a situation where your device is not going to function the way that you might expect it to.
Are there multiple types of 5G?
Yeah, good question here too. So we're seeing advertisements for the new 5G network, and it's going to be deployed. And I think it's T-Mobile has a version of this now, which is 5G, but it's not as fast as 5G will ultimately be. And that's where this question came from. And when Ben sent it in, it's like, it's a good question. What is all of this? We're seeing the term used in a couple of different ways. One that we've talked about before is AT&T offers a 5GE, which isn't 5G. It's really a version of 4G Advanced. And they're branding it as 5G, so they actually have nothing to do with each other other than they're a data network. 5G actually has a couple of different formats to the way it's being deployed. True, the high-speed version of it, if you want to call it that, requires routers in very close proximity to each other, which will generally go up on the power poles and things like that. There's still a lot of negotiation being done with cities and that type of thing to be able to put all of this together. But what T-Mobile's talking about is something that works in the frequency range of 5G, is faster than 4G, so it is a form of 5G, it's just not the highest speed that they can get. So it's one of those things where we're starting at one point and we'll eventually move into another. The one question that I have not been able to get answered, and I reached out to Samsung on this, is if their 5G phones are T-Mobile's version of it, the future version of it, or both. So I will get you the answer to that question as soon as I have it.
What do I do with a CRT television / monitor? Now, I would think you would use it. You plug it in or, you know, I don't understand the question.
Well, that is that is the original goal. I think what this is more going towards is what do you do with one that you no longer can use? So,
An old
CRT television, like a standard definition, they do make converters and things for them. So if you still wanted to use it, it's actually possible to get the digital signal and downlink it and convert it in. But as far as what to do with them, there is a way to recycle them. And generally speaking, bigger electronic stores, as a for example, Best Buy in some areas, will take these devices in. They have a limit to how many you can bring per day. In a lot of cases with CRTs, there is a fee, like $5 or something, to recycle them. But they will properly recycle them and get them out of the waste stream. Now, next week, we're going to be doing a conversation on dealing with e-waste a lot more in general. And a lot of devices you can actually recycle for free or resell or that type of thing. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. But specifically to old CRT monitors, CRT televisions, and that type of thing, it's a matter of just getting out there, finding out who that is. Check with Best Buy, check with your local electronics retailer, see if you can drop it off. Check and see, there might be a small fee, but it is the right way to handle it. So this is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break.
You
Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. G has a guest for us in this segment. He is actor Glenn Beggarly, who we've had on the program before. Glenn has a small role in the upcoming Harrison Ford movie Call of the Wild, which is based on a book by Jack London in 1903.
Welcome to the show, Glenn.
Well, thanks for having me, Gary. Look forward to chatting with you here.
So you're in Gone with the Wild. What's your part in this? Do you a bigger part, little part?
Well, it was interesting. When I went in, they were looking for background people. And the casting director and the director were there, and they said, you know, you've got a good look. We want to do something really extraordinary here. We want to have you in three different scenes. And we'd like you to come in the first week with 1 week of beard growth, the second week with 2 weeks of beard growth, and the third week with three weeks of beard growth. So I did have a lot of camera time were in the first two different shots I did. I played two different characters. And the third character I played was the most enjoyable part for me because that was the day that Harrison was on the set.
And did you actually have an actual scene with him?
Not per se written, but the way it worked out was, which was kind of ironic, we were told explicitly, do not talk to him, do not bother him, have nothing to do with him. But in this particular scene, I play the captain of the little ship that comes up the Yukon River in the 1880s to pick up the people, the local folks. And they had, it was at Universal Studios. Mock Town was built like it had just gone through a snowstorm. And lo and behold, throughout the day, he's coming through the town dressed in his wardrobe. It's 100 degrees, mind you, now. And I look at my partner, and we're at the top of the gangplank, welcoming people on board. And I look at the guy beside me and I said, he's going to walk right by us. He's going to come right beside us here. And I said, I got to say something to him. I have to throw a line in. And sure as heck, he walks by me as we're greeting other passengers. I'm good morning. Hey, happy to have you here. And he gets beside me and the camera's following him up. And I look at him and I go, good morning, sir. And this stunned look comes on his face and he looks up. Well, good morning to you too, Captain. So it was a made-up line. Whether it gets in the film, I have no idea.
You'll have to see the movie like everybody else, right?
I will have to see the movie like everybody else. But the beautiful part about it was, it's 100 degrees, like I said. So they call a cut, everybody's running off, and there's 150 background actors now. And everybody's going to get water and get in the shade and whatnot. And I stayed in my position on the front of the boat, in the shade, and I sit there, and I said, I'm just going to sit here and wait. Well, Harrison walks back up the gangplank, sits about 7 feet from me. No one else is up in front. You got a crew running around. You got a 200-person crew, 150 background people. And I'm sitting there, and I look over at him, and he nods his head, and I nod my head, and I think to myself, oh, my gosh, it's Harrison Ford. I got to say something to the guy. Well, 3 months before, I had been flown to Bucharest, Romania, after auditioning for a part here to play Indiana Jones in a huge commercial for a company called Deka. It's a German investment bank. Exactly like Indiana Jones. The commercial has just come out just recently. And he's sitting there for 5 or 6 seconds, and my heart's pounding. It's Harrison Ford. And I look up and I said, Mr. Ford, I got to tell you, I was in Bucharest, Romania 2 months ago playing Indiana Jones for a commercial. And he looks over at me and he says, you what? You were in Bucharest, Romania doing what? I said, I played Indiana Jones in the German banking commercial. You got to be kidding me. Bucharest, Romania, huh? And we started talking. And I said, you know, this movie's a powerful one for me. We all read Call of the Wild in school when we were kids, and we just started chatting. He said, yeah, we're expecting this to be a big one. This is going to be a good one. And I looked and I said, I got to tell you, I've been a fan of yours for 40 years. And to sit here and chat with you, I said, it's quite an honor, Harrison. He goes, oh, hell, it's good to have you on the set. And we just started chatting. And he goes, where are you going? Where were you again? I said, I was in Bucharest, Romania, doing this commercial. I played Indiana Jones, and I'd like to send it to you when I'm done. He said, yeah, I'd like to see the darn thing. Well, good talking to you. Gets up, walks away.
You know, the interesting thing about, now, I've interviewed a lot of famous people. And the thing I find out about it, my very favorite was Billy Bob Thornton. who I had a similar relationship with. You know, I was actually doing an interview with him, but he's like a real person. You know, they're real people. They put their pants on the same as you and I, and they're interested in some of the same things we're interested in. They like to have conversation. What they don't like is people fawning all over them. Just talk to me like I'm a person. But that, because you told me that story before, and I think it's such a great story, you know, that, you know, sometimes irony is, you know, or serendipity or whatever it would be in this case.
The commercial I did for Indiana Jones, it was 2,000 people submitted for that audition. I got it because they said, you look like him, you have his height, you look like him in the wardrobe. And it is a passion of love, and it isn't about making a great living or not, or being recognized. For me, it's just, I love doing it. I love seeing myself in different parts. And I think the greatest reward I get from people is when they see a commercial or something I've done, they say, hey, I've seen you in that. That was good. You did a really good job in that. That's the reward to me, is just peers saying you did a great piece of work there. That's the joy of it for me.
And, you know, and but the fun part for me about your story is the fact that he's going to tell that story.
I would think.
He is going to sit down. He's going to tell people that story. There's
he asked me again at the end, who is this company again? Yeah. I said, their name is Decca.
Yeah,
Decca,
I met this guy on the set of Gone with the Wind. You're going to believe this. He had, in Romania, did a commercial with me in it about playing Indiana Jones. God, it just cracked me up.
So what I'm going to do, now that it's come out and I've got it, I'm going to send it to Harrison's manager and say, please get this in front of Mr. Ford. I'm sure he'll remember the conversation I had with him on the front of that boat. You know, he'll have to remember the conversation. He was tripping.
Thank you, G and Glenn. Call of the Wild opens in theaters on February 21st. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Great show this week, guys.
Thanks.
I enjoyed it.
You have to let us know how the sewing machine works out. I do know that Singer is a big company and they have pretty good feedback and reputation. So I would imagine they'll get it taken care of for you. It just seems like it was kind of a pain to have to ship it somewhere.
Yeah, it was disappointing.
It's always a bummer when these things don't work out. I had the same thing when Kyber Light, which manufactures lightsabers. We did the, crowdsourcing?
Kickstarter
for them. And you and I both got one, and my very first lightsaber that came from them didn't turn on. And I remember how bummed I was with that. But I called them up, and they had great customer service, took care of it, sent me a second one, didn't want the first one back. And the second ones worked perfectly. So, you know, just sometimes there's bad product. It happens. These are machines, you know, and it's just where it is. Next week, we're going to be answering a user question. We talked about it on our blog this week. By the way, our blog is at theanswerportland.com. We do a Tech Wednesday segment and an article that goes along with that that kind of digs in a little more depth to some of the topics that we talk about here on our show. And this week, that was e-waste. And in line with that, next week, we're actually going to have a guest on that's going to talk a little bit more about recycling of old electronics and that type of thing. Apple Computers said in 2016, they actually got something like $4 million worth, if I have that number right, of gold, just that 1 year alone, back out of electronics that had been recycled. So there are precious metals in these things, and it's worth keeping them out of the dump. And a little earlier, we were talking about CRT monitors, but when you figure the average life of electronics is about 3 years, and a lot of us keep it longer, but that's what they recommend it to be, that you would change your computer after 3 years' time. What do you do with the old stuff? And one of the big things that's very important is whether you recycle it, resell it, throw it in the trash, which I don't recommend, but even if that's what you do, please make sure you get your personal information off of it first.
Absolutely.
If the device is still working, you should be able to reset it. And if the device is not still working, then pull the memory out of it. Now, Gretchen, I know that you gave us a link on how to pull a hard drive.
Yeah.
You know, and that's in this week's blog too. Yes, I understand that you don't want to describe that here.
Yeah, that would be a little bit confusing.
But the step-by-step is out there, and that one piece of equipment you would want to either keep or destroy. But the one thing to remember is storage like that is often reusable. In the case of hard drives, You can get an external case for it. They're not a lot of money. And then plug it in as a USB device on your next computer. So you actually kind of have a backup of everything that came out of the old one. But whatever you do, it's very important to get your personal information off of all of that, mainly because if it gets reused or even if it doesn't, somebody somewhere might have access to that. And you just don't want that getting out there.
Nope.
So you guys looking forward to our upcoming show? We've got the Game Developers Conference in a few weeks, Emerald City, and a lot of other stuff.
Oh, yeah. I'm really looking forward to those.
And I'm a little nervous about the Game Developers one, since I'm not sure I'll know enough, you know? Will I get everything?
Well, you know, one way to find out, and that's to go. And we'll tell you all about it. This is User-Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User-Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2020, User-Friendly Media Group, Inc. The views and opinions expressed in this show are those of the host and not necessarily User-Friendly Media Group, Inc. or the station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting provided by WeAreTechnology.com. Podcast available at TheAnswerPortland.com or UserFriendlyShow.com.